This is Terry DeWitt from Deep Fall, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle. Peace!
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle radio show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our Anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's Boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at today'sboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls! Grab your beers!
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Cato Kalin listens to this all the time.
I am Monty Heath,
so one Heath,
and you are listening to today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle. Real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube or the Rumble channel, please hit that subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, please hit that follow and subscribe button. Help us bring up our numbers so we can pop up, you know, the algorithms, all that cool stuff. And you can see, you know, more interviews like the one I'm about to bring you right now. Talking with Mr. Ryan Kent, a poet and a musician and a hell of a guy from what I understand. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing all right. It's a nice overcast day here in Virginia, you know, so
yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, I'm up here in the Cleveland area, so it's just starting, you know.
It's like, oh yeah, yeah.
Enjoying the weather as much as I could while we had decent weather, and then you know, because I know how crappy it gets around here.
Sure.
But but anyway, you know, usually when I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a little bit of a background. So like originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh God. Probably something stupid. Probably like a fireman or something. I think I really wanted to be a baseball player. I played baseball for a long time and I was good at it, just not good enough. So I don't know. I guess that was it.
Nice. Gotcha. And then like, as you were growing up, like when did you, music become a thing for you? And then like, also like, you know, like writing and poetry.
They're all it's funny. I kind of remember them all. music, you know, I mean, just for the longest time, I just listened to whatever my parents listened to and whatever shit they were playing on the bus, or kids on the bus were talking about. That's what I listened to. So I remember I was at a swim meet, and earlier in the day, I had traded my Sir Mix-a-Lot Mac Daddy CD for like some second generation copy of Nirvana Nevermind. And I think this was like 92 or 93.
Trade it up, huh?
Yeah, I traded up for this crappy copy of it. And I remember I had a General Electric little Walkman. I put that tape in it, and I was on a swim meet, and I pushed the button, the play button, and it started off on the song Breed, you know, the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, and then the drum roll. Yeah. And I remember just being like, what is this? And that was it. That's when I first had my first music. And it's so trite and cliche to say it was Nirvana, never mind, but really it was, you know, that was what did it. And then, you know, I after that, I just hated whatever my parents liked, you know, just like any typical teenager. But writing, it was really weird. It was a little bit of a mixture of Rage Against the Machine and the movie Jerry Maguire. Rage Against the Machine, I wanted to know what Zach De La Rocha was talking about. And I remember having Evil Empire, and I looked at the inside of it. It was a collage of all these books. And then being a teenager, I got on the internet, and internet was still kind of in its early walking stages, I guess. And I went to rageagainstthemachine.com, and they had a reading list. And it was of all these books that were in the collage, and then just books that they suggested. And I just started reading those. And then I watched the movie Jerry Maguire a bunch of years later. And it was the part in the very beginning where he writes this mission statement. He's like one page turned to 25. And I'll tell you what, man. I wanted to have something like that. I wanted to feel passionate about something. I was some stupid kid living in King George, Virginia, man. I didn't have anything, but I wanted to have that. I wrote the first thing that wasn't assigned to me. It was like 13 pages, which just seemed like the Bible length to me. and it was awful, but that was the beginning. And I wish I still had that piece just so I could keep it somewhere. I wouldn't want to ever look at it again, but you know, that's about it.
Nice. And then, as time went on with music, when did you, get the, the taste to try and get into music and play music yourself or do vocals and stuff?
Well, I mean, like when it comes to music, man, like I can't play the spoons. I can't do anything. Being a singer just kind of happened randomly. I was never in a band. I mean, not really in a band until I was about 27 years old, and I'm 40 now. And, I used to just jump around my room and pretend I was the singer of the band. And I ended up meeting up with these dudes at a bar. And I just thought I could sing like John Garcia from Caius. And I could definitely not. But they were starting a band, and they said, yeah, come on and try out. And I sounded more like Mike Williams from I Hate God or something like that. I just sounded more like that. I couldn't sing at all. And I was in that band for 10 years, and I sang in a thrash band and kind of a dark pop band a little bit. But I used to get really stoned and sit in my apartment and read my poetry that I wrote on just like on my laptop and burn it to disc and give it to my friends. So a bunch of years later, I had all these poems, and was like, well, let's try it again. And then it was way better work. And then my pals liked it. So
nice. That's what I was going to say. I mean, as somebody with so much that you're putting on the paper, you know, that's coming out of you, you know, obviously, you know, a lyricist and a vocalist would be, you know, the transition.
Yeah. I find writing songs a lot harder. I've written a bunch of them, but I think that they usually kind of pale to what just my personal preference to what I've written poetry wise. I think it's just something about the form of writing lyrics that there might just be a little bit of a block that's there that isn't there when I write poems. Because when I write poems, I just don't give a shit. I just say whatever I want. But when I'm writing a song, there's a bit of a structure to it.
Yeah, gotcha. And then, you know, before we get into your current project, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, the band that got an honorable mention in your bio was this band Gritter. You care to talk about how that came to be?
Yeah, those were the dudes that I met at a bar, and two of them were 10 years older than me, and the bass player was 14 years older than me, and we ended up going through some lineup changes over the course of 10 years, and I still talk to these dudes. They kind of gave me the chance to do what I'd always wanted to do, and we got to some level of fun, you know, and got to tour the US, play with a bunch of bands that we liked and stuff like that. That was rad. I mean, that's basically what I wanted to do when I was running around with my Walkman, you know, and I had these crazy dudes from Richmond who took this little boy and let me be in their band, and they hazed the shit out of me. And it was great. And I loved it. And I loved every moment of it. You know, it was, I think it's rad that you can meet somebody at a bar and have no idea that they are going to remain a significant part of your life and do it in such a positive way. I mean, I got nothing but good stuff to say about those dudes and the time I had in that band.
Nice. And then, like, I'm always been curious about like certain band names and stuff. Do you know exactly like where that name came from?
Gritter. Yeah, we were originally called Rube, and, we were friends, like we did a little small tour with Sourvane, and their singer T-Roy had said, yeah, I think there's this jazz musician out there who has the name Rube. You know, he might have it copyrighted or something. So we thought about it. We're like, well, let's just change it around. So we're thinking about naming it something. If I'm not mistaken, it kind of went like this. We were at practice and we kind of wanted to keep it something that had still a redneck vibe to it. And I think I think I brought up that people in Indiana referred to rednecks as grits. And then our bass player said, what about Gritter? And then that was it. We were like, all right, sold. And that was the band name. It was that simple.
Nice. Sorry, my dog decided he had to be down here with me. If you see that in the background.
Oh, yeah, break, yeah, I see it. It's
break the fourth wall here with the green screen. But So let's talk now about, you know, your current project, the LP that you got. It's like more like spoken word with your poetry getting more center stage. The Dying Comes With Age LP. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that it was kind of weird. Like, I remember I heard this, I guess it was a 7-inch or something. And it was Kurt Cobain and William S. Burroughs, and it was called The Priest, they called him, and it was just William S. Burroughs reading this 9-minute long short story about a junkie priest and Kurt Cobain wanking off in the background with his guitar, and I thought it was rad, and I wanted to do that, and I talked to a bunch of people about doing it, and I was like, you know, kind of had this idea, and they knew what I was talking about, you know, and then we kind of made it more, some of the stuff more song esque than just straight like that. But, yeah, it was, it was really cool. Everything that happened with it was just kind of by accident. Like, I ran into Jimmy Bauer at a Melbourne show, and we had just kind of become friendly. He was living in the area, and, I just kind of asked him just randomly. He was like, what are you doing, man? And I was like, I'm working on this poetry record, man. You want to be on it? And he was just like, yes, I'm bored as shit. So there's Jimmy Bauer. And that I had never, ever thought about that. And then, like, Laura Pleasance from Kylesa, she is so awesome. And I I had played a show with her years ago, and I hit her up online, and we just kind of started a dialogue. And then I drove down to Savannah, and I did my vocals in her living room. And then she sent me a track that she had written, which is called Couch Time. That's what I'm on the record. And yeah, like, everything that happened was an accident. I mean, I hadn't planned anything out. I just had all these things, and I knew that I wanted to write a record. And these folks actually happened to like what I wrote. And I was like, all right, well, since you're doing me a favor, why don't you pick the one that you want? I don't want to tell you what to do. So really the whole, like a lot of the tracks that are on there, I didn't pick them. They did. So the whole trajectory of the record really was dependent upon what they chose. And it ended up being really something really cool that took a really long time. Like it sat on my phone for like 2 or 3 years. And now it's like, it's coming out on vinyl. It still makes me laugh thinking about it because it shouldn't happen. It's ridiculous. And here we are.
No, it's definitely an interesting concept. And like I was telling you, you sent me the link for your Bandcamp. I was checking some of it out, and I really, like Son of a Bitch really caught me. I really enjoyed, you know, where that was taking me. It's like, you know, it takes you on like a ride, like a journey, because your words are so like visual too. You know, it's like I was almost getting the smell of the room, you know.
Oh, thank you.
And everything. So, you know, I mean, I guess real quick going back a little bit, like, you know, so poetry kind of started becoming like a thing for you, but was it also like, you know, I mean, I'm a guy that's, in recovery and, you know, been kind of during my time in the military, done a lot in the mental health world and, you know, therapy and stuff like that. And I always hear like journaling, you know, don't keep stuff bouncing around in your head. You need a release valve. Has this kind of been like a therapy for yourself? I mean, not to get too personal or whatever, but.
No, not at all. Well, I had written poetry. I think I just started writing poetry just kind of as a lark. Like I considered myself more of a fiction writer. I wrote a lot of stuff that never was finished. Like I get 60 pages, 120 pages into a novel and then just lose it. And I got kind of tired of that. I guess it was kind of unconscious how it happened. I just started doing this thing. But I wrote a book called Poems for Dead People. And that was my first book. And it was just, long story short, a bunch of epitaphs for famous people or non-famous people. And I just wrote about them. Then I went through a divorce and that sucked. And that was basically what kept me afloat, was the fact that I had a phone in my pocket that had a notepad on it. And I just wrote, and I wrote an entire book standing up at a job. And I just continued to do that. Like I've written, everything that I've written has either been on my cell phone or on a tablet. I go back and I edit on my laptop, but the thing has started there. And, you know, I just found that was, I mean, it was really cathartic. And I really found out who I was in a lot of ways. And I think that's the best way to get to know yourself, is to just allow yourself to be vulnerable, even if it's to nobody but yourself. You know, I mean, and then you start realizing like a lot of the shit that people have said about you necessarily isn't true, you know, and that you are this or you are this, or you are this. You start having your own opinion because you actually know what you're talking about when you're talking about you. And I started getting that. And it's really cool. I think that, unfortunately, I think what's going on is a lot of these companies are just really selling a lot, and people are too consumed with consuming, and we're stopping writing. It seems like we're writing more for the benefit of social media than really writing for ourselves. And I think we're losing a voice by doing that. So yeah. I don't give a shit if nobody reads my stuff, but that, at least that means that I'm still writing it. I mean, at the bare minimum, that's all it means, at least for this particular soul, is that I'm going to be able to continue to put something out there and hopefully not have this thing have me totally in its grasp, you know?
Yeah, no. I like what you said there. Well, first of all, props to being, you know, working at a job and standing up and writing a book at the same time. That's how a multitasking skill and way to really, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. you're getting paid to do your passion. So that's awesome.
Yeah. But, all my bosses were really cool about it too. They were always just like, hey man, I'm going through some shit. I'm not on Facebook or anything. I'm writing. They would always be like, that's okay. You can do that. And like all of my jobs, all I've done is stand. And I've worked at a venue for about 8 years, and they've always allowed me to write my stuff when I'm doing whatever I'm doing. You know, it's just cool. It's nice to have that understanding.
Yeah, man. No, that's awesome. And then, I mean, like, yeah, I wanted to touch on that too. You made it into a couple books. Like, when did you realize that, okay, I got all this material that's just been here for me. How do I get this out to people? And like, how did that transition happen for your connections?
I came home drunk one night and decided I was going to post one of my brilliant poems on Facebook. And I did. And it wasn't brilliant, but it was a poem. And a couple people reacted to it. And it made me feel good. And then I was in a band at the time, and I thought I should just be focusing on the band and on writing lyrics and stuff. But so I kind of hadn't touched poetry for a bit. Then it was like, well, why not, man? I could just screw around with this. And then I kind of liked the direction I was going. I just wrote this poem, short poem about a dead person. And then I just kept doing that. People started reading it. And then the publisher of this local magazine who I'd written for, he's a friend of mine. He said, why don't you think about putting all this together in a book? And I kind of laughed at it. Was like, no, nobody's going to buy this. What are you kidding me? All right. But then I was like, fuck it. Why not? So I went to a local print place that some friends work at, and I think I printed out like 40 of them or something. I wasn't under the impression that I was gonna get rid of any of them. Sold them all, like right then. I got to go to this cool bookstore in Richmond called Chop Suey, and they had me read there, and I sold all my books, and then I printed out some more, and it was just kind of this weird, funny thing that happened. And then I went through the divorce, and it was a weird, funny thing I depended on. And then my next book was called This Is Why I'm Insane. Then the following one was called Hit Me When I'm Pretty. And they all kind of danced with the same subject matter a bit. You know, it was just kind of, I don't know, it was just a way of, I heard this thing in Richmond years and years ago, and I've never forgotten. It was the cure for the pain is in the pain.
Yeah.
And that kind of was that's kind of just what I went with on that.
Yeah. You said, you know, originally when your friend was like, man, you should put this out into a book, and you're like, nobody's going to buy this. And it was like, you know, as we were talking about earlier, as you're doing, you know, you're coming from within and writing all this stuff, you're learning, I am not this, I am that, you know. And we kind of all grow up with either this inner voice that was, or was something was put on us when we were young, you know, telling us, absolutely, no one would want this, our self-worth, you know. I mean, I've been on the same journey still at 49, trying to find my self-worth, you know, the longer I'm on this recovery journey, you know. But, you know, the first thing was like, no one's going to buy this. And then look what happened when you put it out there, being real, being vulnerable. I know for myself, like, vulnerability has been the foundation of when my healing really started. So how has, you know, I mean, you kind of touched on it, but how has your vulnerability been for your growth? And have you gotten feedback from other people that it's helped them as well going through?
Hey baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I gotta tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at Today's Boondoggle. And the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, protein, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled DREEM. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from today's Boondog sent you.
Well, yeah. Congratulations on your recovery, man. That's awesome. That's really good. That's a hard decision to make. And a lot of times you're alone when you make it and you're alone when you're doing it. So that's congratulations on that. You deserve all kinds of props.
Thank you.
I drank a lot for a long time, and I think I was drunk for like 12 years and, like 4.5 years ago, almost five, it'll be 5 years in January. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I had somebody tell me before that it was like, they said like a light switch went in them and they didn't feel the same way that they felt about a certain thing anymore. And it was like that with me. Like I tried to quit drinking before, but I didn't want to. And it was like this, this switch was flipped, and man, I had no interest in it at all. I went to AA a couple times. It made me want to drink more, which I'm not trying to, if it's working for you or for others, do it. It just wasn't working for me. So I just went cold turkey and I didn't do it. And, I was scared, because I didn't know if I was gonna be able to write anymore. So I wrote so much drinking and drunk, and, that was kind of scary to deal with but then to see the words come out on my phone, it was all right. I still had stuff to talk about. It was just, there was a little bit more clarity and I was not going like this, but kind of driving a little bit straighter. And I think by doing that, I wasn't necessarily running away from as much. Like I would maybe was running away in my writing. Or maybe I wasn't. I think I had a clear head of who I was and what I wanted to say. I just needed to grow some confidence. It's like, that's the thing that I noticed was gained a whole lot of humility. From understanding the choices that I made and the reasons why I was where I was. And all of them were me. So I needed to own that and understand that, well, it can be different now. Now you just have to get your shit together. And that's what I did. You know, I mean, to some extent, you know, I can at least pay my bills. I'm not worried about the next drink.
That's awesome, man. You know, I mean, I heard a lot of recovery in that answer there too, because it's like, you know, I mean, you mentioned AA didn't work for you. I mean, it's something that I'm involved with and I work with a sponsor and work the steps and stuff like that. But, you know, part of the steps for me was, you know, that, you know, you do that fourth step, that fearless and searching moral inventory of yourself. Sure. And you write it all down, you know, and then you find out, you know, all these people you had resentments toward that basically, well, you know, your role in everything. You know,
yeah,
and that's
absolutely
kind of what I heard and like what you were just saying too. And then you got to go out and, you know, verbalize it. And as time goes on, try and make those amends whenever possible. And, But I heard that, you know, and humility. Humility is like, you know, I heard you mention that too. And it's just like, it's key to working this thing, whether you're working it in the rooms or working it out, you know, you're
absolutely
just basically, you know, spoke recovery just now and what you're doing. So that's awesome, man. I like that.
Well, thank you. A good friend of mine, he's very, 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 serious about his recovery, and he goes to meetings and he goes to out of town meetings and he really follows it, and it's super cool. It's I always feel slightly ashamed because he is very into this and he's serious about it and stuff, and I feel bad because it's like, ah man, I didn't do that, you know. But I totally respect what he does. He did. I think he's probably a stronger person than I am for doing it, as a probably you are as well. Maybe I'm a little more lazy.
I mean, sometimes it's just like, you know, you got to find the right niche or right group of people. I mean, I've been very blessed with, in my recovery, like, you know, it's like, sometimes I'll go and hear some old timers. And at first I didn't like the old timers, you know, I was just like, what the hell do they know about me? But then I'm sitting there like soaking in wisdom from them. You know, and then I'm hitting some other meetings, and, you know, either there's some that work for me and some that don't. And then, like, I've been involved in music for a number of years, did promotions and stuff like that. And because of being transparent in interviews like this, I've been invited to some Zoom meetings now. And I got a brotherhood of people in the music world that, yeah, I mean, those are like the meetings I love hitting the most, because we're just like, you know, we know we're not perfect. We're a bunch of freaking freaks, you know, trying to just keep each other sober and stuff, man. And I just love running with that group, man. So, you know, I mean, maybe you might find something like that. I wouldn't like completely write it off, but, you know, as long what you're doing is working, man, you know, and it sounds like it is, because like everything you said in that one answer was like, you know, sounded like recovery, man. So.
Oh, thanks. It's weird. You just go back and you look at all the time that was wasted. I mean, for like, I'm 40 years old and I decided that I was going to go back to college and finish my English degree. I failed out as a senior in college. And, it's been 14 years since I'd been back, and I started, back in August. And I talked to an advisor, and she said to me, she asked me, she's like, do you like school? Are you liking this? And I said, I was like, yeah, I like all the classes. They're great. The professors are great. I enjoy it. But I'm definitely coming into this as a humbled person, because I am here with people I could have fathered. And these people, I've slept longer than most of these people have been alive. And
Billy Madison, I know, man.
Or Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just that humility that comes with that is the fact that I am back there because I didn't do the right thing back then. And here I am on the same level as these babies. And that will definitely shake off your ego a bit, or shake off any arrogance, is that I'm here because I didn't do it the first time or the second time. This is the third time I've been in college, really. And it's like, I'm not an idiot. I just didn't do anything because I was drinking too much. And it's like, so when you sit down in a classroom and you think about that, and you look at all these young people who were born the year you graduated high school or later, and it's just, whoa. That really, really, really brings you back to earth. It's not as like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just like, yeah, yeah. That makes any sense.
No, totally makes sense. Because when I came back from my last deployment and before I retired from the military, it's like I got an opportunity to go back to college, you know? So I was in the same situation. I was early in my recovery too. So I went through that, like, old dude in class, you know, what's he know?
Yeah.
But then sometimes I was like sitting there listening to these professors and these young minds, like sponges taking all this in, and they've never been outside of their community, you know?
Sure.
And I'm like,
sure.
And I'm trying to share some of my life experience from overseas and whatever. And I'm looked at like I'm the idiot. So that was humbling in its own right, you know, but you know, I mean, I would say, and I felt exactly like what you're saying, I think, at that time. But, you know, the longer I'm on this journey, the more I'm like grateful for the things that the fuck ups, all the places where I messed up and screwed up, because now I can look back, because those were learning, you know. It's like,
yeah,
I'm doing
sure.
shit like now in jujitsu, I do jujitsu now with some friends, and they're like, dude, it's either you win or you learn, you know. And that's like, wow, I can use that mantra on everything in the past in life. I sat with so much shame and guilt that held me like an anchor for so long, because I was still in active addiction with, you know, two kids and their mom at home, you know. And you know, and they could have grew up hating me, but you know, now I'm in a place where it's like, you know, I have a great relationship with my daughters, not with their mom anymore, but it is what it is, you know. And
yeah,
you know, I look back, you know, I hated that person. It's tough to look at that person in the mirror at that time, but now I'm like I said, I'm just kind of grateful that for all the learning, you know, blocks that have been thrown at me on this journey and stuff. But I wanted to mention too, because, you know, talking, getting back to your current project, I see you work with Randy Bly, yeah, from Lamb of God, and he was somebody that I had become friends with years ago, back when I was still, you know, active in my addiction and in the military. I actually stayed at his house in Richmond one weekend, and you know, love that dude, amazing human being. But I screwed that up because of my ego, because of my addiction, because of my mouth. And you know, that's somebody I'm still hoping for an opportunity to make an amends to down the line, you know. But how is that getting with him and working, you know, with him on this project?
Randy is he's become a good friend of mine. We met each other like 16 years ago, probably. I interviewed him for a magazine. We got annihilated during this interview. And that
sounds
band
like how
that
we
I,
met back in the day.
Yeah, God, yeah. We were drinking Jaeger and smoking cigarettes, man. It was hell on earth. It was great. I loved it. Yeah, but I joined that band, and what do you know? The bass player is best friends with him. So here's Randy again in my life, and we just stayed in contact, kind of. I'd mentioned to him, like, back when I was going through my divorce, I was like, I want to quit drinking. And he kind of gave me some info and stuff and put me in touch with a guy that he didn't know I was already friends with. And I think it disappointed him, because it's like, I don't think I can handle this right now. I handle a divorce and trying to do sobriety. I can't do it. So I didn't. But then when I did quit drinking, I think it made him really happy. He'd always bought my books and supported what I did. It was really cool. It was like having an older brother's friend who kind of kept his eye out for you, looked out for you, you know. And I ran into him at a Starbucks. I hadn't seen him in a minute. And we got to talking again, and I was like, you're going to be on this record, man? And he was like, yes. And, you know, that's kind of how it was. And went over to his place and sat and listened to what I already had, and what he was willing to do, and what I wanted to do, which was the exact same thing. And it was easy. And we stayed pals. And yeah, he's been a really cool role model. The bass player in my old band, Big John, he told me, because I was kind of like, why does he like me? Why does Randy like me? He was like, you would remind him of him when he was younger. So I thought that was cool. Made me feel good. You know, I had something in common with this dude. I loved his band. So it was neat to kind of have somebody kind of be like, hey, dude, don't do it like that. Do it like that. It's like, oh, right. I'm not an idiot. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, man, he's a amazing guy. And I remember, like, when I stayed there with him, like, I was having this conversation with his wife at the time, and about like holistic things I was doing to try and get healthy. You know, she was kind of like really big in that. And I was like, oh yeah, sometimes I take baths and essential oils and stuff like that. And he's like looking at me, making fun of me. And like Sacrament, I think, was the album that was just coming out, the one with Redneck on it.
Yeah.
And he was on the cover of, was it Revolver? or whatever. And this is when he shaved his head.
I remember that. The close-up.
Yeah, and he had a ton of those there. And I'm like, dude, can I get one? Will you autograph it for me? And he's like, yeah, no problem. So he's like, write something, Bill, blah, blah, blah. Hands it to me. I read. He's like, quit bathing in women's stuff. Randy. And it's like my prized possession, dude, still to this day. It's just like,
heck yeah,
I love that dude. And like I said, I hope I get an opportunity to make some amends to it, but it, you know, whatever my higher power has in store. But I completely 100%, you know, support, big fan of his band, always have been, and you know, support him. And so I'm really looking forward to hearing more of I think you only had a couple of songs up right now on your I'd love to hear his the thing that he does with you when that opportunity comes out.
It's a cool one. He chose it, and I wasn't expecting him to have chosen that one. His voice sounds great, and he did it in his apartment. And the thing that I like a lot about his recording, it was unintentional what happened, but in the background you can hear somebody in his building close their apartment door. And I love that, because I want this entire record to sound, man. So my friend Eric Larson, he played in Alabama Thunder Pussy, and he's the drummer for Avail. And he told me, he said, man, it sounds like I walked in on something. And I told him, I said, dude, that's like the best compliment you could have given me. I was like, that's exactly what I want it to sound like. I want it to sound like you just open the door to some apartment building and you go from song to song or apartment to apartment and you find out some other weird shit. You know, I wanted that to happen. So it was like that. This guy that I'm friends with, he understood what I was doing, didn't know what I was doing. And he heard that. That was pretty great.
Randy, that's what I was saying, like kind of what I heard. You know, on the tracks that I got to hear, it's like it's almost like one of those, like, I don't know, it's like a Stephen King short story that, you know, I forget what that movie was, that certain things that happen in certain rooms, you know, the different little short stories that happen in different rooms in an apartment or something. I forget who it was, but that's exactly kind of what I was getting at. Cause it's like, you take me on this journey. It's like, I can almost smell the room. I can almost like feel the dust and whatever. And in it, you know, so it's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's that's what I wanted it to do. I didn't want it to sound like an American Prayer of the Doors, you know, with Jim Morrison. I didn't want it to sound like that. I really liked that song, What's He Building in There, by Tom Waits. I really liked that. It was just kind of a bunch of weird stuff in the background, him telling this little story. I like that. I wanted it to. A lot of my heroes were not metal dudes. This album, I wanted it to sound like if it was just thrown on a playlist that had these guys on it. I didn't want mine to stand out as like, what the hell is that? I would want it to just kind of be like, oh yeah, right. And that's, love Nick Cave, love Tom Waits, love Leonard Cohen, I love Mark Lanegan. It's like, those are my dudes. And like, if you listen to my record, that's what I would hope that you would say, would be like, yeah, maybe this track, that's cool. I'm going to put on my Tom Waits list or my Mark Lanegan list or whatever playlist, you know. I took this line out of this 90s movie with Danny Glover called Angels in the Outfield. It's a kids movie. And Danny Glover said, what's the worst thing that can happen? We're going to fall out of last place. And I thought that was the best. That was like the mantra that I've had, you know, is that, you know, coming back from being a drunk and having a real low self-esteem and not feeling hot about myself at all, I had to push myself to do stuff. And one of the first things I did was I hit up Eugene S. Robinson from Oxbow. And he ended up being my editor for several articles at a magazine and ended up becoming friends. And I asked him, and he was like, yes, I will absolutely be on your record. And I never would have asked him that before. I never would have hit him up in the beginning. I never would have hit up Laura. I never would have asked Jimmy at the Melvin show. That was just, it's like, what are you going to say? No. I mean, it's a poetry record, dude. I don't blame you, you know, but just getting over myself enough to be like, I don't give a shit. If you don't want to be on it, cool. having that mentality, it ended up working out. And I ended up being able to have these people that I've looked up to what they've done for a really long time and have, and just be humbled by the fact they liked the shit I did. You know, that's the huge reward out of this, is that, you know, it's just like you, when you're busy drinking, you're busy doing all this other stuff. You're not focusing on you and the things that you should do and you have the time to do and you could do, because you're just too busy worrying about, I don't know, 90 square feet of this bar that you're in, you know? And
yeah,
it's just like, I never would have done that because I never would have gotten out of the stool. I would have never shut up and stopped talking about what I'm going to do because I would have just been hyped on getting drunk. And because I didn't do that, because I had the humility, I kind of learned like, yeah, just go ask. If you have something and you believe in it, then ask. And I think that was like the lesson learned in this, is that you can do a whole lot of stuff when you stop doing a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, Ryan, unfortunately, you know, like I said, I'm kind of short for time tonight, man, but I feel like I could still talk to you for like another hour at least, man, on so much. But the LP is gonna drop when, and for listeners, where could they like go check it out and pick it up at?
Well, we've had a bunch of delays with it. It actually, because of COVID, you know, it has screwed up everything with vinyl, and I've just seen this across the board. Had nothing to do with our guys, but actually, it just came in the mail today. My publisher just received it. So you can actually purchase that through Rare Bird's website, which is www.rarebirdlit.com. They have it there. It's going to be out on all the streaming sites as far as I know. So it would just be like Ryan Kent, Dying Comes With Age. You know, it should be out this month, which is I thought that was actually kind of cool, because the guitar player from my band Gritter, he has a band called Future Projector, and they have a brand new album that came out called The Kybalion. They're an instrumental band, but they are wicked as shit. And then Randy's record came out this month, so that's kind of neat to have two of my guys on the record, and their records came out. So it's that's kind of a nice little thing to share. The month of October in 2022, our albums are out. And they're here for you, man. God.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Good stuff. Well, hey, man, sorry that I had to cut it short tonight. Had some previous engagements but man, it was good getting to talk to you and hear more about your story and get to know you better. I appreciate you being, absolutely, you know, open and vulnerable with me. And, if people want to like follow you and your journey, more, where would you send them?
It's probably my Instagram page. It's, Poems for Dead People. And, so it's like at Poems for Dead People, and it's all one word. I post a lot of stuff on there. Also I write for RVA Magazine. So that's a great arts and culture magazine. They have a Instagram page, RVA Mag. They have all kinds of great material. A lot of local stuff that comes out, and then a lot of stuff that's just national. You know, they made a lot of stuff happened when the protests were happening here in Richmond, and a lot of people turned and started looking at RVA Magazine, and they needed a lot of people to hear what they were saying, because they're a good mag. So definitely check that out. But yeah, basically on Instagram, that's the way place to find me.
nice.
All right, appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, man. Great talking with you, and I look forward to checking out the rest of that. Dying Comes With Age.
Yes, sir. You got it, homie. Thank you for having me again.
I go to the park for peace sometimes. Sit on an open bench overlooking the city, smoking leg has a push from the hip down, from the femur to the knee, through the tibia to the ankle. When you get the thing in a rolling motion, the centrifugal force will keep it going as long as you keep pushing. In theory, you could go on.
With that Van Cammy Ann.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. Until I got the 4-8.
I've tried to look.
Now she's banking off of Jiffy Lube.
I should have went in.
I tell you what, my daughter, her friend stole that tape. And somebody, some guy stole it at the house. They were watching it. And I told her, I says, did you take that
tape? Yeah, we took it.
I go, where's it at? Yeah. And she goes, somebody stole it. I don't know who. And I go, well, you know, that wasn't my tape. I said, you got to give me money for that. I said, you go get your friends, because that was Bill Bailey's tape.
Yeah, yeah. That was believable.
Did you get any residuals from that?
No, I didn't.
That's good.
I'm all over.
Not a one.
Yeah, you were.
But the thing that cracked me up about that whole trip
on
there,
rain and took all
that the was when we
New
got.
York,
I got you on that know. Thing where Captain's mask. Where you remember?
Oh yeah.
Remember that time when we were all getting ready to leave, and I told me you
peeing at the ATM.
Peyton told me you pissed in the ATM machine on base. Remember, I told you, God damn it, they got cameras on there. They camera you. You got to go to cameras.
Yeah, it was the same time I got kicked out of the girls' place I was living at back home with my parents.
Right, we're trying to call you.
My parents were trying to get a hold of me. I was like, oh,
everything just came together.
If Kelly wouldn't have read, the plan was if Kelly wouldn't have ratted us out, you were going to go there, and we were all going to leave, and you would have been staying there waiting for captain's mast.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall. Brought to you by Today's Boondoggle. Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com, for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into today's Boondoggle.